Okay, so I will talk about what's written here about the six vertex model with domain wall boundary condition. And this is my joint project with Vladimir Fokin from our department. Just right here. So let me introduce first the six vertex model. So the six vertex model, it's also known as a model of two-dimensional ice, and I will explain on the next slide the connection to the ice. It is a model on a square lattice, and configuration lives on the edges. So we have vertices, we have edges of the lattice, and we have arrows on edges. So we have two possibilities for direction of the of each edge, and the arrows satisfy the following condition that at every vertex there are exactly two arrows coming in and two arrows coming out. And this rule is called the ice rule. Now, there are exactly six possible configurations of arrows at each vertex, and these configurations are presented here, listed here, and this is the name why it's called six vertex model. Now, we will consider domain wall boundary conditions, and these are the following. So, we have a box, square box, and all arrows, and we have boundary conditions of the following type. All arrows on the top and at the bottom, they are directed directed in. Inside of the box, and all arrows on the side, on the left side and the right side, right hand side, they are directed out. Okay, and so we'll consider six vertex model with this special boundary conditions and condition, and it's called domain wall boundary condition. Now, relation to the square ice, it comes from two-dimensional arrangement of water molecules, H2O, with oxygen atoms at the vertices. So we have at each vertex here 4x4 oxygen atom, and we have hydrogen atoms between vertices. So between each vertex we have hydrogen atom, and it belongs to some oxygen atom. And let us place the direction, the arrow, from a hydrogen atom toward an oxygen atom. Okay? So for instance here, we the arrow will be this way, from right to the left. And here it is down, and so on. Okay? So, now the model is it's a model of statistical physics. And so we assign some weight, Wi, which is a non-negative number, positive number. To each vertex, to each possible vertex state, so we have six states, and now we take a product of weight over all vertices. So it can be written in the following way. We take weight Wi and we raise it to power Ni, where Ni is the number of vertices in the state I. And then we take a sum of all configurations, And this is the partition function. And the problem we were interested in is to find large N asymptotics of Zn. Now, we will consider the case when the weights are invariant under the reversal of the arrows, which basically means that the weight W1 is equal to the weight W2, and we denote it by C. Then W3 equal W4, it's A. W5 equal W6, it's B. Now, we define the parameter delta as this ratio like in trigonometry, a squared plus b squared minus c squared over 2ab. Now, in fact, among these three parameters, actually, there are two essential parameters because we can factor out one of them. Okay? Say again? Even more. I will list now. Yes. Okay. I will show again because I don't remember myself. Okay. Yeah. So there are two special configurations. These two different comparing to others. Okay. So. Yeah, so W2... it's a conservation, right, yeah. Right. Say again?
Yeah, W3, 4, 5, and 6, the lines run straight through. And yeah,
W1 right.
And W2, they...
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the difference? 5 and 6. How is
that
different?
Yeah, they just run straight through. So there's 4 that run straight
right,
through.
Right.
And then there's the two special ones, which are just
okay. So let me. This is one. And. This is two. Okay. This is. Yeah, it's wrong. What's wrong? Yeah, this is wrong.
And the other four are what they have.
Yeah. Okay, so. Yeah, so three is this way. Yeah, it goes through. Yeah. It's a big difference. It's wrong. So this is the parameter, delta, and there are three physical phases in this model. The ferroelectric phase, when delta is greater than 1, anti-ferroelectric phase, delta less than negative 1, and disordered phase, delta between negative 1 and 1. And the phase diagram is shown here on this figure. So the disordered phase is this half strip. This is ferroelectric phase, this is ferroelectric phase, and this is antiferroelectric phase. And so I will be today interested in the disordered phase, which is inside this strip. So we have two parameters. And coordinate C is A over C and B over C. And now there is a standard way to introduce convenient parameters instead of A, B, and C, two parameters, T and gamma, in the six-vertex model. In the ferroelectric phase, it's introduced in terms of sinh function of parameter, and anti-ferroelectric, it's a different combination of sinh function. And I will be interested in the disordered phase and the standard way to introduce these parameters. So we have two parameters, gamma and T. A is equal sine gamma minus t, B equals sine gamma plus t, and C equal sine to gamma. Now we have conditions. Gamma is greater than 0 and less than pi over 2, and absolute value of t is less than gamma. So there are two parameters in this model. And now the solution for the free energy of the six vertex model with periodic boundary conditions was found by Lieb by means of beta ansatz, and there are several papers by Edward Lieb in 67. And then it was slightly generalized by Sutherland the same year. And it is with periodic boundary conditions. Now, the phases are described in details in the book of Rodney Baxter, Exactly Solved Models in Statistical Mechanics. And there is a paper of Baxter with co-authors where they solved the same, again, with the help of beta ansatz, six vertex model with antiperiodic boundary conditions. So this is... Now, the six vertex model with domain wall boundary conditions was introduced by Vladimir Karepin in 82, and this is the reference. He's on his way from the airport, so I'm still waiting for him. Okay, so, and he derived in this paper some recursion relation for the partition function. And by using this recursion relation, Anatoly Zergin in 87 derived a determinantal formula for the partition function. I will show you the formula. And so it was just announcement of the formula, and detailed proof of this formula and the generalizations are given in the paper of free authors, is that Gin, Corker, and Karepin in 92. Yeah, it's domain wall boundary condition. It's a very special case. It's very different from PBC. And the fact, from the very beginning, I can tell you that it turns out that for this model, the free energy depends on the boundary condition. So when Karepin several years ago told me that there are 10 different free energy, I said it's impossible because there's a theorem. And this is the theorem, which is in the book sale for UL. It states that the for reasonable models, the free energy does not depend on boundary condition. The point is that in this model, you have very long interaction effectively. Infinite interaction, and the conditions of the theorem, of course, are violated here. But in non-trivial fact that the answer depends on boundary conditions, so the answer is different. Okay, there are some cases when they coincide, but okay, in the disordered phase they are different. Okay, now the Isergin formula express partition function in terms of some Hankel determinant. So there is some explicit prefactor and times Hankel determinant, which is written here, and the elements of the in this Hankel determinant, matrix elements, are written as derivatives of some explicit function, which is written here, phi of t equals this ratio. Okay, this is an explicit formula of Isergin. So, and as I said, it is detailed proof was in the paper of Corker, Isergin, and Karepin. And in the end, they said that, of course, we would like to know what is the large n limit of this determinant, but it's not clear what to do. Okay, so it's... now, there are... Yes. Yeah, it's a boundary of the phase, exactly. Yeah, it is between, I will show, it's this boundary.
T is a long
enough
direction, you just
indicated? No, T equals zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, t equals 0 effectively corresponds to this line x plus y equal 1, yeah. Okay? So there is a rather short and elegant derivation of the Isogin formula from the Young-Baxter equation, and it is in the paper of Karapin and Paul Zinzelstein. In this paper, I will speak more about this paper, and by Greg Cooperberg in another paper. Okay, I will also speak about this paper also. Okay, yeah. Okay, so now, yeah. Okay, now one of the applications of the determinant formula of Isogin is that partition function tau n solves the what's called Todd equation. And it's written here. So derivative is with respect to parameter t. So we have two parameters, t and gamma. And there is, and so this is the Todd equation. And this was used by Karapin and Paul Zinzelstein in the paper I already cited. To guess what is the answer for the free energy. And they assumed some ansatz about tau n, and not only about the leading term, but what's very important also subdominant terms. And then they derived some heuristic formula for the free energy. Okay, I will show again this formula, because... And another application of the Isogin formula is that tau n can be expressed in terms of a partition function of a random matrix model. And this relation was obtained and used by Paul Zinzelstein in this paper in Physical Review. And this is the random matrix model, which is will be which is very important for us, and it's a sort of starting point for all our calculations. And I will explain the relation, the expression of tau m in terms of random matrix model. So it's going the following way. First of all, phi of t can be represented as a Laplace transform of another given explicit function, m of lambda, and this is just an analytic formula. It's checkable, just directly. Can be verified by direct calculations. Now, what we are doing, we substitute this formula into a Hankel determinant, and after some calculations, we arrive to the following matrix integral. So we have some, again, explicit prefactor, and then integral over the space of Hermitian matrices of exponential density, which has a form which is usual for random matrix models. It is a trace of some function of the matrix. So M is a matrix. V is some function which is related to m of x. So we take log minus log, it's v. T is the parameter. And so we take this function v of m. We can take, okay, just, and then we take trace. So this is the usual formula for the unit ensemble of random matrices, and it's a unit ensemble because it's invariant with respect to conjugations of M by unitary matrix. So if we multiply U from the other side, U star on the other side, then both DM and this trace will be invariant. And so this is a unitary ensemble of random matrices. And now it is well known that partition function of a matrix model can be solved in terms of orthogonal polynomials. Yes. No, except formulas. No, it's No, I don't know. So it's not. This can be done more or less for any Hankel determinant. But I asked Paul if he knows other cases when we have Hankel determinant for other models. He said he didn't know basically. So now, what is the formula? It is basically Dyson formula, and the relation is the following. So let us consider monic orthogonal polynomials on the line with the weight, this weight, x prime tx times m of x. So the linear coefficient is one, so it's monic polynomial, and if we take L2 norm of the nth polynomial, it's a constant, Hn. L2 norm with this weight. And now the Dyson formula is that tau n is just a product of this normalizing constant Hn. Okay? So, say again? I don't know. Maybe Godin for me. Okay, it's a slightly different formula. This I heard it from Dyson first of all, but everybody refers to him. Okay. But it's very difficult to say for sure because they did the same time. Yeah, this for tau n it's n factorials cancel. Yeah, in fact, usually you have n factorial, right? But for tau n, it's already taken care. Okay. Anyway, so now, so we are interested in large n behavior of tau n, and we have this product h n. Now this h n can be expressed in terms of recurrent coefficients for orthogonal polynomials. So the three-term recurrent relation for orthogonal polynomial is. If we multiply the following, if we multiply n orthogonal polynomials by x, then it's polynomial degree n plus 1. And so we write it as pn plus 1 of x because the leading coefficient is 1 here and 1 here. And then it will be some number, some recurrent coefficient qn times pn and plus another recurrent coefficient rn times pn minus 1 of x. And now if we take a dot product, take dot product of both sides with pn minus 1, then we immediately obtain this formula that rn is equal to hn over hn minus 1. So if we multiply pn minus 1 and we integrate with respect to this measure, then this term disappears, and then we have hn over hn minus 1. It's a very well-known formula. So now we can write by iterating the formula, we can write that Hn is H0 times the product of recurrence coefficients of Rj's from 1 to n. H0 is just the zero of coefficients, so we take 1, 1 here, and we integrate, and this is some explicit number, explicit in terms of in terms of gamma and t. And now we substitute this formula into formulas for tau n, and we arrived in this expression. So it expresses tau n in terms of h0, which is explicit, and then this product of rn to different powers n minus n. So this is the formula which we use. And now let me formulate the main, I would say, technical result of our work. It is asymptotic behavior of the recurrence coefficients Rn. Now, let me comment a little bit. So it is not directly sufficient to know asymptotic behavior of Rn because here we have also R1, R2, and so on. And we don't control them asymptotically. So they will contribute. And we want better asymptotics, okay? And so that's why I call this, I'm sorry, technical result, because technically we obtain asymptotics of IN. Okay? So what is this asymptotics? Let me comment on it. So it is N square over gamma square. It is some, in fact, it's some normalization. And this factor is sort of standard. Okay, we'll explain it later. Now, basic formula is what is in the parentheses. So it is some limiting value R, and then we have correcting terms of different powers of 1 over N, and the powers in general are fractional powers, so it's not integers. So, and it is quasi-periodic in N, because omega in general some real number. So what is omega? It is written in terms of ratio T over gamma, and it is pi times 1 plus zeta. Now R is given explicitly in terms of this zeta, and this is a finite sum, and kappa j is a sort of arithmetic series of numbers, and we stopped at terms of order 1 over n square. In principle, we can get the asymptotic expansion, full asymptotic expansion, but in this case we have some long but explicit formulas for cj and c. For higher order terms, it becomes so complicated, it's very difficult to get explicit forms.
And the final answers are going to depend on these cj's and the c?
C will be important.
Yeah,
cj and somehow they will disappear. Yeah. Yes. How do you know? Yeah, that's right. Okay. So now we would like to return to our, of course, original problem of finding asymptotics of tau n and zn. And the first step is the following. We just can formulate that the free energy exists for tau n. So we normalize tau n by this product. We take logarithm and divide by n squared. And from the theorem 1, we derive the following, that as n goes to infinity, fn approach f, and the error term is of order 1 over n, and f is log of r over gamma squared 1 half. So it's the same r as was in the previous slide. Here we have this r, we take log and divide by gamma squared. Okay. And this formula coincides with formula of Poisson-Jostein, who obtained what's called saddle point approximation for random matrices. It is some very useful physical approximations, and there is some additional approximation, but the result is the same. And also, it coincides with heuristic formula of Karepin and Zierstein, which was obtained from Todd equation I mentioned before, from some assumptions about the free energy asymptotics. But we would like to know what's here, what are the next corrections, and to that end, we can use the following formula, which is usually called deformation formula, because we deform, we are looking at how Fn depends when we change t. And this is one of the deformation equations. And it turns out that the second derivative of Fn with respect to t can be expressed directly in terms of Rn. And this can be this is equivalent to the Todd equation I wrote before. It can be derived from Todd equation, and vice versa. So now, and we show, because we know asymptotics of IN, this gives us asymptotics of the second derivative of FN. And basically, it's what's written here. If we take FN, subtract F, which is the leading term, it is the limiting free energy, then the subdominant terms, if we differentiate with respect to T square, they have this asymptotic behavior when n goes to infinity. So we have finitely many terms, this quasi-periodic, then term of the order 1 over square, and then correction. Yeah, as I said, it can be written as an asymptotic series, and we have more terms here, and terms of the order 1 over n cube, there are different terms. But all of them can be obtained. And so this solves the problem up to the following. So we don't know, we know second derivative, and we have to somehow it's up to the, to a linear function. But still we don't know this linear function. So usually we're trying to find some special value of t when we can again solve explicitly for fn. But here we'll do slightly differently. Now, this formula was, the formulas I discussed were for, okay, it's here, for the logarithm of tau n, but it's easy to go back to the original partition function of the sixth vertex model, and for this, for Zn, we'll get the following, that 1 over square, n square log Zn, I don't put here minus it. I don't know, traditionally, people here don't put minus, okay, follow the tradition. And so it is some f plus term of the order 1 over n, and f is solved explicitly in terms of Tn gamma. Okay, so now I want to tell a little bit about the history and about there are some results which were known, there are some beautiful exact formulas, and they concern with the following cases. First of all, there is what's called free fermion line, and this is the circle, or arc of the circle. It is a free fermion line where the result was known. And there are three points, A1, A2, and A3. A2 is on the free fermion line, so it is basically the same result as for... but A1 and A3, this gives the new information about the partition function. And A1, A2, and A3, they refer to enumeration of alternating sign matrices. Yes, please. A1, A2, and this is A3. I will give explicit coordinates. Definition of what?
The point.
I will give the formula. Okay? Over here, no, it is between negative 1 and 1. I have to calculate. I will give you in terms of gamma and t. Okay? So let me formulate the known results. Now, on the free fermion line, Zn is 1. It's explicit. And it's known in physics for several years, but and it's definitely in this paper, they gave this result without any reference. I found them in different physical paper, but nobody gives a precise reference who derived it. So I can't tell you, but it's well known. Okay, now this point is the following, so gamma is pi over 4, and t can be any number less than t over 4. Okay, and if we take log, it's 0, so f is 0, and if we look at the formula I showed, it's f 0. So this is in agreement with the formula I showed you. Now, the what's called ASM line, ASM point, I'm sorry, it is A1, and this is the point where gamma equal pi over 3 and t equals 0. T equals 0, it's, these are points on the diagonal. And in this case, the weights are equal, ABC equals square root of 3 over 2, and therefore, Zn is just some factor times A of n, where A of n is the number of configurations in the six vertex mode. Weight, you may think that the weight is 1. You see? And there is a one-to-one correspondence, I think discovered by Greg Kupferberg, but it's straightforward, I will explain, between the set of configurations in the six vertex model with domain walled boundary condition and the set of n by n alternating sign matrices. Now, what is the this matrix, alternating sign matrix? It's a matrix, all entries of the matrix should be negative 1, 0, or 1. Now, if we look for sequence along any row, we look for sequence 1s and negative 1s, 0, we don't look at zeros, only 1s and negative 1s, they should alternate. That's why it's called alternating. And also, the sum of the entries along any row and any column is, should be 1, which means that we start with 1, then somewhere minus 1, somewhere 1, and we finish with 1. Okay? And such a matrix is called alternating sign matrix. Now, this correspondence is established in the following way. Given a configuration of arrows on the edges, we assign minus 1 to any vertex of type 1, 1 to any vertex of type 2, and 0 to any other. And so, for instance, for this configuration, we'll get this matrix. So all entries 0, 1, negative 1, and here we have 1, negative 1, 1, here we have 1, negative 1, 1. This is an example. And so the question is how many such matrices do we have? And this was the famous ASM problem, and there is an exact formula for this. Yeah. Right. You just count how many alternating matrices.
How many different configurations of arrows there are.
No. Yeah, but it is, as I said, so there is a one-to-one correspondence. So now I'm counting how many configurations of arrows. But there is a one-to-one correspondence between a configuration of arrows and the set of alternating sign matrices. And so, to counting how many configurations is the same as to count how many matrices we have.
It's the conservation rule for the six vertex model.
Right.
So, essentially, as you go across, you don't have much choice. It's that recognition of what you have. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so for the number of these alternating sign matrices, there is an exact formula. It was conjectured by Mills, Robbins, and Ramsey several years ago, and it was proved by Zeilberger by combinatorial arguments. Another proof was obtained by Greg Kupferberg, who used the Isagin formula. And very recently it was reproved by Coloma and Prankor, who used orthogonal polynomials. So for orthogonal polynomials, in this particular case, they identified these orthogonal polynomials as some classical polynomials. They have, I have to look. Yeah, so, Okay, so I can tell you all the known orthogonal polynomials. So for on the free Fermion line, This is Majak-Nikolajczyk polynomials. On, at this point, these are continuous Hahn polynomials. Okay. But there is explicit formula for recurrence coefficients for them. Okay. And so this is how Kolomyi-Prokop prove this formula. Now, for this formula, we can find asymptotics when n goes to infinity. And in terms of Zn, it will be of the following form, some constant, explicit constant, 9/8 to power n square. So this is the free energy, limiting free energy. Then we have this power lecture and minus. And then we have Erdős. Okay, this is, I will go to this point. It's a very important point, okay. Yeah. Now, there is another point which is also solved. It's what's called free enumeration of alternating sign matrices. And on my picture, it corresponds to gamma equal pi over 6 and c equals 0. It's again on the diagonal. And in this case, Zn is equal some explicit factor times An3, where An3 counts the number of alternating sign matrices with weight 3 to power k, where k is the number of minus 1 entries. So, and so this is basically what was calculated, An3, and the answer is different for odd and even ends, and it's presented here. So this, again, formula was conjectured by Mills, Robbins, and Ramsey. It was proved by Kupferberg and also by Kolomyi-Prokop. Again, they managed to identify the orthogonal polynomials with some classical, it's not completely classical, it is in terms of some hypergeometric functions. These orthogonal polynomials are known also very recently. I mean, it is maybe several years. Yeah. And in this case, the orthogonal polynomials are continuous continuous dual Hahn polynomials. And again, recurrence coefficients are known, and they prove this formula. Now, if we use these formulas and look at the asymptotics of Zn, then we'll get, again, constant time free energy to the power n squared, and here n to the power 1/18. Okay. And so, now, if you look at these formulas, we can make a conjecture that the answer is always constant times free energy to the power n squared, and n to some power. And this was conjectured by Paul Zinzenstein. But I don't know how he came to this conjecture, because I believe the results I showed you, they were obtained later than he conjectured it. And I asked him a month ago, I don't know about this, and he said that somehow he died. I don't know. He didn't tell me details. But anyway, so this is the conjecture of Paul Zinzenstein, that Zn behaves in this form. Okay, so now we can rewrite it by taking log if, but we can write it as that 1 over n squared log Zn is f plus 2 kappa log n over n squared plus log c over n squared, and then here term small o of 1 over n squared. Now, the exact formulas I showed you, of course, support this conjecture. So on the free Feynman line, kappa is 0. And for these two points, one enumeration, three enumerations, we have exponents minus 5 over 36 and 1 18. Okay? And now, The result proved the Zinzenstein conjecture, and we found the exact formula for kappa. And so we proved this formula. R term is 1 over n to epsilon. Yeah, it can be, again, improved. We can get here asymptotic series if we want. But for kappa, we obtain this explicit formula. Okay. And so these are main results. And now let me very briefly, yes. Yeah, right. That's a very good remark. And okay, so as I showed you, right. Here we have. You mean? Yeah, but okay. So this is t equals zero, and the frequency in my omega in my formula it is pi, and so we have plus minus one, and it exactly fits to this structure. For generic case, you have some frequency, right? And so I don't believe that it can be solved explicitly because of that. No, this formula is only for this point. Ah, no, it is for everywhere. It's for any t and gamma in the disordered region. Okay. So now let me. Yeah, I assume that gamma is less than pi over two. Yeah. But for pi over four, it's zero. Okay. And here, Vladimir Karekin. And welcome him. Okay, so. Okay, anyway, so let me describe the main steps in the proof. So the proof is based on the Riemann-Hilbert problem and Riemann-Hilbert approach, which is now well developed. It's again recent, but it's now well developed for orthogonal polynomials. But there we have some additional difficulties. And let me. So the first step, we use Zimmerstein's rescaling, which is quite natural. Of the matrix integral, there is some standard form for writing matrix integral, and this is what this rescaling does. Okay, the first step in our proof, we consider what's called equilibrium measure for the matrix integral, and the equilibrium measure describes the following. So if we have matrix integral, it's not only integral, but also ensemble of random matrices. And equilibrium measure describes the limiting probability distribution of eigenvalues of this matrix ensemble. And in this case, the additional problem which we have to deal here is that this equilibrium measure itself depends on n, where n is the size of the box. And when n goes to infinity, it has a limit. And this was used by Poljan and Rustem in his calculations, but it's only in the limit when n goes to infinity. What we need for all our calculations, we need next terms. So we have to evaluate equilibrium measure asymptotically when n goes to infinity, and we need not only the leading term, but also the next term. And this is this is the first part in the work. Second part is the and the third part basically it is the Riemann-Hilbert approach to asymptotics of orthogonal polynomials. There is it's a long story, in fact. I can say it privately because it's a long story. I guess I will lecture here to trying to describe it here. Okay. And this was developed by in my paper with Alexander Eads, and we solved the quartic case. And then it was extended to a general matrix model in the paper of five authors, Dave, Kriegerbauer, McLaughlin, Benakidis, and Joe. And it's based, okay, we also use basically, okay, it's very, very close. There are some technical some technical details which are different in our paper with it and in this paper of five authors. And both papers are based on this Dave Drow nonlinear steepest descent method. Again, so I can, it is like steepest descent method. It has all the elements of the steepest descent method, but it is applied to some non-commutative Riemann-Hilbert problems. And there is no integral you evaluate, but there's some sequence of transformation of the Riemann-Hilbert problem. And now it's known as nonlinear steepest descent method by of Dave and Drow. And that's applied to different integrable systems like nonlinear Schrödinger equations and some other one. So whenever, okay. And this step is new because and it's very essential for us. So the meaning of this two steps is to bring the original Riemann-Hilbert problem for orthogonal polynomials to a problem which can be solved by Neumann series, by iterations, because the jumps becomes very small, of order 1 over n. Now, in our case, because the equilibrium measure depends on n, the situation is very delicate, and to solve the very last problem, this is a new step, and it's again, this is the main, these are two main steps which we have to do. This is very, very beautiful, but it's already known. And then the last step is to derive from asymptotics of recurrence coefficients the formulas for the free energy, which I showed you. Okay, so, and the last step, so if you'd like to see the paper, it is now posted on the archive and it's submitted to CMP. Okay, thank you. In this case, no, because okay. So that's in some cases, yeah. So usually, what we can do, we can evaluate. Yeah. So the partition function can be expressed also as a free world determinant, but it leads to the same Riemann-Hilbert problem, and this is how normally people would find the asymptotics of free world determinant by reducing to again to Riemann-Hilbert problem. Yeah. Right. Yeah, in some cases, yes, but, okay, these are cases on the circle, and then instead of Hankel determinant, you have Toeplitz determinant. And for Toeplitz determinant, you have a formula of, it's called Borodina-Kunkov, but actually it was discovered earlier, before. Geronimo and his supervisor, I forgot the name, I'm sorry. In the 80s. Anyway. And so it can be used, but it is when orthogonal polynomials on the circle. Here, it's on the line, it doesn't work. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so there is a difference. So this model can allow different interpretation, and one interpretation is it's solid on solid. And if you formulate it as solid on solid, you can see immediately that what is the difference. In one case, it's sort of linear function, and in solid on solid, the values are unbounded, right, on the spin. And you have linear boundary condition, and in the other case, it's just constant or periodic. And this is a big difference, I mean, so. In solid-on-solid, probably it's the best way to see it, that it's different. Yeah, if you reformulate it into as a solid-on-solid, there is some way to put heights So having this direction of, just if you go in positive direction, you add one. If negative direction, against the arrow, you subtract one. And because it's six vertex, it's compatible. And in this way, you will get six vertex more. You will get this height model, which is solid on solid model, with some complicated interaction, but it's a local interaction. And if you look at the boundary conditions, they're different. In one case, it's linear, domain wall, and normally you have periodic boundary conditions.
So the domain wall is a bit of a misnomer, because normally you would have expected that the next free energy going like n.
Yeah. Yeah, in this case, we have to live with this. Yeah, exactly. It's very delicate. Yeah, it's already eight vertex, and it's impossible.
Difficult.
Yeah, maybe difficult. Very, yeah, difficult. Very difficult. Yeah, yeah.
It's possible, surely, if you're pessimistic, if you look at the problem.
Right. Right. Yeah. But it's. Thank you.